This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. This week and next, we'll chat with two of the premier choral ensembles, one from here in the U.S. and one from across the pond in the U.K. And we begin on this side and chat today with Joshua Copeland, founding member and artistic director of Antioch Chamber Ensemble. On the cusp of its 25th year, this New Jersey-based group has strong ties to this area, this region, and our station, with half of its members being graduates of Westminster Choir College. That's where Joshua and tenor Stephen Sands formed this ensemble, which began with two others as a quartet of talented Westminster singers. Also, many of the group have sung or soloed with Trinity Choir Wall Street, whom we have worked with for so many years with our weekly Bach at One series. Antioch Chamber Ensemble finished a residency at Princeton University with the Glee Club and Director of Choral Activities at Princeton, a voice those of you who listen often to this station know well, Gabriel Crouch. Harrowingly, as you'll hear, they just got the residency in before COVID hit early last year. If the name Antioch is curious to you for a choral group, well, if you love singing Joy to the World during Christmastide, that will give you a clue. I'll leave the detective work to you. Antioch Chamber Ensemble's latest CD on the Bridge label features the music of one composer from the opposite coast, the Oregon-based Robert Keir. You're listening to the opening track of that disc with music and words by the composer, the title also lending itself to the disc as a whole, In Praise of Music. I spoke with Joshua Copeland from his cottage up in Maine via Zoom this past weekend.
Yeah. happy today to be speaking with Joshua Copeland, who is the artistic director or founding member artistic director of the Antioch Chamber Ensemble, one of the premier choral ensembles in the country. We're going to start right out with the latest recording. I usually save that, but it came out on Bridge Records, which is a great label. I've known Becky and David Sturban for many years, and they're just wonderful people. Finds the group performing the work of a single composer, and I thought we'd start there because the Antioch becomes ambassadors for his music when you have a single composer and you devote the whole disc to one person. This is composer Robert Keir. So who is he? How do you know him? How does Antioch get to know him, his music? There is one other CD in the market devoted to his works by Consperari with Craig Hall Johnson, past Cadenza guest. And then finish that up with, why did you choose him to devote a whole CD to?
Well, so we met Robert Keir in 2016 when we were doing a residency at Harvard University. And it was their inaugural year, 2016, of doing what was called their New Music Initiative. And Robert Keir was brought in to sort of curate with these, I believe it was 8 students, sort of their compositions and what they were specifically written for. So Andrew Clark, who's the director of choral activities there, he contacted us to be sort of like their guinea pig group. So these composers had to write for our specific voicing, which is 12 singers. And Robert Keir was there to sort of guide them and help them understand really what they could do within the limitations of choral writing. Obviously, you know, very different than the range that an orchestra could play and stuff. So we got to know him very well with his coaching of the students. During that time, Robert was very impressed with what we were able to kind of pull out from these composers. Some of them wrote some pretty, I should say, very difficult things for voices. And he was just utterly shocked that we were able to make them come to life. So it was a great sort of first meeting. I had honestly, as far as West Coast composers, you know, I'm from Westminster Choir College. So right, the biggest thing I had from Westminster was Eric Whitaker and Morten Lauritsen. So having sort of a different tonal color to me was exciting. I should say that we had never performed a piece of his before this either. And during this New Music Initiative, we didn't perform any of his works specifically on the program. He was really there just to guide these students.
We should say he's based in Oregon. He lives there and he teaches there. And he's very prolific. He's written symphonies and chamber music, all kinds of stuff. Go ahead. I just wanted to throw that just to give a context of who this guy is, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing sort of to be opened up. You know, you feel that you know a lot of the composers that are out there when you're doing a lot of music, especially new music, and to kind of be thrown into a new realm of, I guess, just sort of like a new sound. It was really exciting. And because he liked the work that we did with the students, he approached us for recording a CD of his works. That was really sort of the impetus for this, that he really wanted a group that he envisioned in his head to make his works come to life. And that's sort of how this blossomed from there.
The works on the CD, this was a collaboration with him to choose which ones would be on the CD and all this kind of thing with him?
Yes. So his idea was that he was going to take pieces that he already had in his, you know, repertoire and find ones that would work specifically for us and also rearrange some of them that didn't for Antioch. There were a few pieces on this CD that were written for larger ensembles and even like multiple groups, like, you know, double choir or two choirs with soloists. And he was able to rearrange them for us specifically. I was wondering if I could just talk for just a quick second about one of the pieces on here that kind of shocked me, because I know that when I got the scores from Robert, I was really worried about what was called the Freedom Song on here.
Yeah, the spiritual, yeah.
Yes, because it is a spiritual, and I have been very reluctant to do spirituals with Antioch, unless they're, you know, like a Shaker hymn or something, because I feel like it's cultural appropriation. You know, I'm like, there's no way the 12 of us can, you know, generate that kind of thing. But yeah, this song scared me. I was like, how are we going to do this? It's very much in line with an African-American spiritual. And how is a group of 12 singers going to really pull this piece off and make it sound authentic? And out of all the pieces on the CD, I think that's the one that hit me the most. When I first played it for my mother, you know, she was listening to some of the edits as we were going through. She just burst into tears. She's like, I've never been so overwhelmed by sound in my life. And it's a piece that is not, it wasn't even on Antioch's like sort of choral radar. I know that when I went into the booth to kind of listen to a playback, the first time that we had gotten it all kind of synced up correctly, I was in tears myself. I had never been so overwhelmed with just vocal sound, except for possibly when I did the Britain War Requiem in Westminster. And for me, I feel like that piece is sort of the powerhouse of the CD. I really feel that it's just so different and so out of our comfort zone that the fact that it came together the way it did is, for me, extremely special.
Well, it's interesting when you listen through the CD, that one seems to be cut from a little bit different cloth than the other pieces. And to show how composers work, we mentioned him, is that Craig Hall Johnson and Conspirare did a CD. Well, they did a CD called Freedom Song, which they actually asked him to write this spiritual. And I don't think he would have done that if he hadn't been asked. And then composers sometimes need the prodding of interpreters and practicing musicians to get them to go someplace maybe they wouldn't have gone. So that's interesting that you had that experience, but you know, he might have had the same thinking, how am I going to write this, you know, because it does kind of stand apart from his other pieces, you know.
Right. And it wasn't written for a group of our size. It was written for a bigger group. So, you know, when I got the score sent, I said, Robert, no, there's no way we can do this. There's no way we can pull this off authentically. And I said, the only way that we will ever be able to do this piece is if we're able to multi-track it. Because, you know, you can't take parts away from the chorus and then also have solo lines that are, you know, sort of ad-libbing. So that was also our first foray in doing that. I just wanted to point out that piece because I think it's very special and it is extremely different than anything else on the CD. And I think what you just said, David, is exactly right. It was written for something specific that might not have been within Robert's comfort zone. And I think he really turned out a pretty amazing aleatoric gem, shall we say.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. You've worked with a lot of young composers, a lot of contemporary composers, but it shows the power sometimes of a group at the level of like Antioch, where if you go to a composer, say, hey, you know, you might be pushing that composer, he or she, into an area they don't, had never thought of going or was not a comfort zone for them, but it might turn out something great. You know, that's an interesting other way of inspiration, the other flow of inspiration.
So without further setup, here is Freedom Song by Robert Keir from the new CD of his music as performed by the Antioch Chamber Ensemble led by their artistic director and my guest today, Joshua Copeland.
Oh,
you and Stephen made the decision, whether Antioch sort of, this is kind of a risky move on your guys' part because your CDs before this had been varied programs of choral pieces, contemporary pieces from centuries back and such. And this would be devoted to not only one composer, but a contemporary composer and a composer that is not that well known. So this is kind of a risky move on your part, don't you think?
Well, I think it was less risky than the CD we did just prior to that, which actually was devoted to one composer out of LA, Matthew Brown.
Oh, right. And you did the Matthew Brown CD. You're right. Yeah, sorry.
He was completely unknown, a student basically at the time. Yeah. And I fell in love with his music because of stuff that was sent to us through YouTube. He had found some of our recordings and, you know, he sent me some of his music. And that was another one that I'm like, I really see a future for this sound. You know, that was with Asus Records, and we did that full recording of his pieces. But yeah, I'm very hesitant to do just one composer because I feel that, you know, when I program a concert for Antioch, I really like variety. And it's tough to get that sometimes with just one composer. You know, you pop it on and you just get sort of the same sound wash through the whole recording, which can be beautiful and relaxing, but I tend to do more of the CDs that are very mixed, for sure.
Well, and you know, if someone wants to pick up the CD, download the CD, you know, if it's a varied program, they might be doing it because of one piece on the program of a composer they really like or wanted to hear or whatever, but this, they have to have to buy into the music of Robert Keir. And there are some interesting traits in his music that run through. He covers a wide area on this. There's this sacred spiritual nature to his setting of ancient Latin texts, even mixing them kind of strangely in some pieces. You know, it's very jarring how you move from some very traditional texts through some of the pieces. These kind of ecstatic celestial endings of a number of pieces where the voices sort of soar up at the end. Boy, your sopranos really got a workout. Just talk about things you guys took away from having not done his pieces and then putting out a whole CD of just what marks his music for you guys.
Well, I think it's great that you pointed out sort of that ending. We started to call it sort of the Keir ending.
Like
a lot of his pieces, you know, he was really in love with the sound of the sopranos of the group. And I think that was something that he really wanted to feature on this recording. And as I was going through the scores when he originally sent them to me, I'm like, oh yeah, Amy is really going to be happy about this. Because they're all ending on like, you know, high B flats. And of course it was on an ah. So we thanked him very much for an open vowel on that. But they did become sort of a trademark sound to his music, at least on the music that he sent to us. And it was something that, you know, once we got sort of in us, we were able to just sing through. Initially, when you're kind of going through new music, you know, you need to get it in your voice. It's really hard to end pieces quite like that. But if there's anything that Americans love, you know, they love a big ending.
Yeah.
So I would say that's kind of his, yeah, definitely his signature sound on this particular recording here.
Right. And I guess what maybe makes that easier, not only as a palate to listen to, maybe even easier to sing, you would know better, not having seen the scores, is that there's a consonance, meaning consonance versus dissonance musically, that runs through the music, which kind of allows the listener and maybe even the singers to latch on to something, you know, in his very contrapuntal areas. You know, and I'm saying it's not this sharp-edged, dissonant, disjointed music, which, you know, you're looking for lifelines here at times, you know?
Yes. Well, we do have one of those pieces on.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I'm glad he's going to get exposure with a group of your caliber. I think that's important. I think it'll be very beneficial for him as a composer. I think he's probably very happy as a composer.
Once again, from Antioch Chamber Ensemble, who are led by my guest today, their artistic director, Joshua Copeland's latest CD of music by West Coast-based composer Robert Keir, a work bearing the well-known Latin sacred title Veni Creator Spiritus, Come Holy Spirit. But the work begins on the darker side with the Dies Irae, or Day of Wrath, moving through well-known Latin liturgical texts such as Agnus Dei and Liber Mei, before reaching the Veni Creator Spiritus, followed by Agnus Dei and Dona Nobis Pace. Here are the closing minutes of this work.
let's go back a little bit about the group. You and Stephen Sands kind of formed this in the late 90s. Maybe a little banal point here. I'm curious about the name, because if I would have seen Antioch Chamber Ensemble on a piece of paper, I would think it was an instrumental group. So I was curious as to how you came about the name, and then Antioch too. I mean, the ancient, which is
this is actually a pretty funny story. So we started at Westminster as, you know, students there, and our first church job was at St. Bernard's Episcopal Church in Bernardsville, New Jersey. And so the four founding members were sort of like the four, you know, section leaders. And our first CD that we had put together, we named With One Accord, because we would always drive in Kristen's Honda Accord up there to the rehearsals. It was sort of like a ha-ha joke. And our original idea, you know, we thought we were so cool, was that we were going to call it ourselves Sine Nomine, you know, without a name. Come to find out there was already a group called Sine Nomine. So we were like, well, that's a hymn tune name. You know, we're at a church. What other hymn tune, you know, kind of sticks out to us? So I'm pretty sure it was Kristen who was like, ooh, Antioch. And I was like, absolutely not. I said, I think it sounds like a heavy metal band. I said, you know, nobody's going to know what it really is. And so we kind of went back and forth with some hymn tune names, and it kept coming back to Antioch. And I know Stephen was very instrumental in saying, you know, it's A. So it's going to be the first thing people see if they're looking through stuff. But my concession was, I said, I'll do Antioch if we put Chamber Ensemble on it, because I wanted the possibility of us doing stuff with instrumentalists and other vocalists. So that was sort of my addendum to the name. And that's where that came from.
Okay, because Antioch Choral Ensemble even would have been, but it's interesting when you see the name, because I was just curious, you know, just go down that side path there. There are some common threads among many of the members of the group, not all the members, but many of the members. You already mentioned one of them. Two of those major threads intersect right dead with WWFM. One of them is that a number of you have not only sung with, but I'm sure I have broadcast you, and I know I have because I recognize the names and speaking them on the air as soloists, having worked with the choir at Trinity Wall Street under Julian Wachner. And of course, for over 10 years, we've been broadcasting the Bach at One series. We got in there just after Julian started the first cantata run. You know, I recognize a lot of the names in Antioch who have cropped up in the larger works we've done, the Passions and such, as soloists. So there's that, which really is interesting because so many of the voices in your group have been heard on the WWFM coming from Trinity. The others you've mentioned is Westminster Choir College. You're a graduate, Stephen's a graduate, but it's about half the group, give or take, right?
Yes, at this point, yeah.
We have been partners with Westminster for so many years, doing the Evening of Readings and Carols and the homecoming concerts live from Richardson and so much else, and many of the people who teach there, hosts of our choral show and such. There have been a lot of changes at Westminster in the last few years since you left, obviously. What did your education there, and what still resonates being that premier choral institution it is, what still resonates from you from your time at Westminster that you know you only would have gotten by going to that institution, I guess is the question.
Wow, that's a really, really deep, deep question. A lot. When I look back at my time at Westminster, it really had to do a lot with just the opportunity to perform not only on the world stages, but with, you know, the world's greatest orchestras and doing such a wide variety of music that, you know, I came from Virginia. You know, I was kind of the boondocks. I had never experienced anything like that. And I think as a student there, you know, you're just thrown into a world that is so musically overwhelming and amazing that it's hard to imagine just even performing things like that. You know, you see it on the TV, see it in movies. You might have gone to a concert. I hadn't even been to an orchestral concert until I got to college. So it was definitely very eye-opening, ear-opening, and door-opening, really. You know, you start to meet colleagues. You start to kind of find the kind of music that you love and you want to champion. And you get to do just such a variety of things that I don't think you would get anywhere else. And you know, obviously with the changes that have happened at Westminster, especially in the last couple of years, it's so sad. I think the biggest thing I remember from my experience there, and, you know, this isn't putting anything else below it, is just our graduation at the Princeton University Chapel. There's nothing like it. You know, I've been to tons of graduations around the globe, and it's just nothing compares to a Westminster graduation in that space. It's just utterly overwhelming. I mean, I'm getting a little choked up thinking about it.
Yeah. And of course, when you were there, you had the great fortune to be there with the late Joseph Formerfeld. Just mention something about him and what he brought to that institution.
Oh my gosh. Joseph Flummerfelt was an amazing advocate actually for Antioch, because you know that Westminster Choir was such an important part of the Spoleto Festival. And after our graduation, you know, Antioch started doing stuff with the Piccolo Spoleto Festival. And Joe was always there for every one of our concerts, supporting us. His demeanor and the way that he grew a choral ensemble, those are the things that, you know, have stuck with me since I've left. He was just a great guy. And it's hard to express what making music was like with him. You know, I know I'll never have that experience again, but I have the memories and I have the recordings, which is actually something that I always talk to my students that I teach about, is one of the greatest things ever is a recording. It's something that's there forever. If the artist is no longer with us, we can always put in a recording and hear what they've brought to the world. And I think that's the reason we make them. Probably one of the greatest things for musicians ever.
Turning to a CD of music by the young West Coast composer Matthew Brown that the Antioch Chamber Ensemble, led by their artistic director and my guest today, Joshua Copeland, put out on the Assis label, titled Though Love Be a Day, here is Mr. Brown's setting of A Red, Red Rose.
So you mentioned how the core of Antioch was this traveling, singing, gigging quartet of singers, you know, in the Honda Accord. Did you know, how did you get to the point where we're going to form an ensemble? How did you know how many singers that would entail? Where were you going to look for these singers? Was it going to be mining the riches of New York region? I mean, it's a New Jersey-based ensemble, but I mean, how did the vision start and then grow and then become Antioch?
So we started out as the Antioch Quartet because it was just the four of us. And Owen Burdick, who was there previously to Julian, actually a few iterations before Julian, had heard our CD. And he actually brought us in. He, I don't want to say poached us, but he brought us in to Trinity Wall Street to be section leaders because he really liked the sound that we had as a quartet. And once we got there, of course, we were with a whole bunch of other singers that are amazing as well. And I really wanted to branch out from just doing four-part music because I thought it was very limiting and I really wanted to do some of the bigger works. So we originally sort of doubled to an octet. And then we really settled on 12 singers very shortly after that, because I liked the mixture of having, you know, four sopranos, four basses, and then two altos, two tenors. For some reason, that sound to me was where it was at. Mm-hmm. So 12 singers, and then we were in New York. So we were at Trinity Wall Street. And as you know, some of my singers are still there.
And then you just started recruiting singers to want to be in the ensemble? Is that what happened, basically?
Yeah. Sometimes after we'd have our services there on Sunday morning, we'd just kind of go over into the side chapel and practice other stuff. Because obviously we were doing only sacred music there. So this gave us a chance to do, you know, some madrigals and part songs and things like that. It is a reason that a lot of our music, you know, in the earlier iteration of Antioch was definitely sacred.
So much of the critical acclaim for performances and recordings of Antioch focus on your guys' just, you know, incredible intonation and sense of ensemble and the blend. So as you started to gather the singers, I mean, I know you sang with them at Trinity. I guess you're looking, or are you looking for a Antioch voice? Because you're trying to keep this. I mean, that's one of the hardest things about a choral ensemble, right? Is to keep that sound. So, I mean, just talk about as the years go on, subtracting, adding voices, getting what's in your head as far as what you want the group to sound like.
I remember that when I was in high school, the first time I had gotten a Cambridge Singers CD, I was over the moon because it was the first time I had heard quote unquote straight tone. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. And this is my vision of what I want singing to sound like. However, you know, when we started to form Antioch into a bigger group, my ear is always drawn to this. It is to anyone. It's really where your ears leads with the melody. But my sound for sopranos was very specific. And when I've auditioned for sopranos, I'm always looking for that sound, which I call my Antioch sound. And, you know, even if they don't have it in an audition, a lot of them can make it. But the idea is that I want it to be pure, but I don't want it to be strident. You know, I don't want it to feel like it's a pressed sound at the top. I want it to be free, but it needs to ring. And for me, that's where I built the sound. As Antioch has gone through different singers, I would say the most consistent sound we've had is in the soprano. As we've come into sort of the latest group, I feel like we've filled in the bottom more. I feel like, you know, we sang a little bit lighter in the basses and tenors at the very beginning, and now it's more balanced.
Not to go back to the new CD, but, you know, the proof is in the pudding, because what the sopranos accomplished on this new CD really shows what you were talking about.
From a CD that Antioch Chamber Ensemble put out on the MSR Classics label titled The Passing of the Year, with music by well-known choral composers such as Eric Whitaker and Morton Lauritsen, here is Kansas City composer Gene Belmont Ford's If Music Be the Food of Love.
Thank you.
Education's always been important to you guys as a group. You've done a number of residencies. I guess the most recent one before COVID slammed the curtain down also brings you as an intersection with us, as it was with Princeton University and the Glee Club there, and Gabriel Crouch. And Gabriel is not only a good friend, we have broadcast so many of his incredible concerts that he has done since taking the helm there now over a decade ago. He's also one of the hosts of our Sunday Afternoon Sounds Choral Program. So that residency, you had this incredible concert in February, just days before COVID would come in. Did COVID cut the residency short, or was that concert you did with the Glee Club and the student composers, was that the culmination of that residency?
That was literally the last time Antioch performed live.
Yeah, I believe it.
February 29th. Yeah, that was it. It didn't cut it short at all. That was the culmination concert on February 29th. But it's weird. We weren't even really thinking about COVID at that time. While we were doing it, you know, we had heard a few things in the background, but nothing that was like, oh my gosh. And it was weird, you know, after obviously everything shut down, there had been some news article that there was some like big super spreader event in Princeton that same day, that there was like some big party on the February 29th. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, we were so worried. I'm like, did they come to the concert? No, they would have been too busy. But yeah, that was an amazing residency. Were you there broadcasting that?
No, I mean, hopefully when we get back to doing things, we can reach out to Gabriel and hopefully get that concert on the air, because I think it's a really important concert, as he focused, like I said, a lot of the attention on student composers, and you conducted some of their pieces and you guys workshopped, you sang with them. And that was the concert also had the Thomas Tallis 40 voice spinolium, and the so it was an amazing concert, and it falls right in line with what Gabriel's been doing there. I guess the benefit for you guys for doing the, not only the residencies, but working with these young singers is what?
Well, there's a lot in it. The thing that I like to show, especially music students, is that, you know, you can you can do this for a living. A lot of dreams are dashed by parents. I've certainly had them thrown at me where I've been told, you know, you can't make your living doing music, find something else to do. And I think it's really important that they can see that, you know, it's a viable career. It can be challenging at times, but it can be very rewarding. And the other thing is, a lot of these other places that we've been to don't necessarily have the experience of singing with a professional group. And as I said previously to you about like a Westminster experience, it's really important to have an experience with a group that's outside of your realm. I think it gives you a chance to see and hear different things and find out what you really love. And, you know, Gabriel there is bringing through different groups, so his singers and his, you know, students can hear these different ensembles and take something with them. Even if they don't do music for their career, it can be the love of music. Part of what I do when I teach is, chances are, you know, 99% of you will never do music, but if you can enjoy it and appreciate it and know what goes into it, I think that makes you a better person.
Unlike Westminster, I mean, what's interesting about what Gabriel does at Princeton is most of those students, virtually all of them, are going into fields not even connected anywhere close to music and will make their mark there too. But it's fascinating what he does there and the love of music he instills in these kids and singing and choral art.
Turning once again to that CD by the Antioch Chamber Ensemble under the direction of my guest today, their artistic director Joshua Copeland, titled The Passing of the Year, the disc getting its title from the cycle of pieces under that name by British composer Jonathan Dove. Here are the women of Antioch Chamber Ensemble in the movement Hot Sun, Cool Fire, setting words of George Peel. Thank you.
Well, we have to deal with all these cadenzas I've been doing over the last 18 months with what happened. So COVID, you know, the curtain comes down. If you just tell us how that affected group. Now, you know, choral ensembles, I don't think if people stop and think about it, I can't even imagine what goes through a choral conductor's head or someone in a choral ensemble of how this is the worst of all situations when it was at its peak. I mean, talk about when it hit and what's been happening over the last months and the prospects ahead.
Wow. When it hit, I think it was just a shock because everything shut down.
Right.
It didn't really sink into your head that, you know, for the performing arts, this was it for a while. It just seemed like the world stopped. So, you know, everyone kind of did their thing. I ran up here to Maine to escape the area because nobody knew what was going to happen. But then when we kind of sat back, that's when it really started to hit me that, you know, we're not going to be performing for a while. And, you know, a lot of my singers, that is all they do. And for me, that I think hit me the hardest in the gut because, you know, I knew I'd be fine because I also teach and I can do that online. But having sort of the employment opportunities ripped out from underneath all of my singers, it really is devastating. And it weighed very heavily on my mind, you know, on what Antioch could possibly do, which is a lot of why we focused on kind of putting this album together, because we had recorded this before COVID had hit. It just seemed like a good way to channel sort of our energy in a time that we were not doing live performances. I do know a lot of my singers started doing online choirs and other ways to make music. And we had been approached, you know, a few people had said, you know, why don't you do an online concert? And I really just don't feel it's the same. Not only is it an immense amount of effort for such a small amount of musical time, nothing can replace that feeling of being in a live concert.
Has the group met to rehearse or not?
No. We have not come together since that February 29th concert in Princeton, New Jersey.
Wow. So what does it look? I know we're going back into this, you know, fourth wave and all the uncertainty, blah, 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 blah. But there is hope as well, hopefully, if people will get the vaccine. What is ahead as far as performances and even rehearsing and just getting back to singing with each other?
Well, the tricky part is going to be what is getting booked. You know, a lot of presenters are very hesitant to have, especially singing groups. I think they're more comfortable with, you know, getting a string quartet or something like that. But having a choral ensemble, right now, we're still being told that singing is, you know, one of the worst ways to spread COVID. And so it's kind of gotten this stigma of maybe we should hold off on that. You know, this year's really up in the air. If things look like they're going to get better in the spring, you know, we might approach doing some concerts then. As far as the fall goes, I'd say nothing. You know, I do know a few of my singers do have some things coming up. And obviously, we had mentioned Trinity Church. They're doing stuff with the services there. But as far as paying choral gigs go with Antioch, this is probably a lay low season for a while.
Well, even Trinity has been very cautious. They're not doing anything till the spring. And that's going to be very sporadic when that happens too, rather than a weekly type of thing like the Bach at One series. Have you guys talked about plans for either the next recording? Is that something you could possibly get in the recording studio? I mean, I'm just curious, where do you go from the Robert Cure CD?
You know, it's kind of funny that you ask about recordings. I'm probably the only one in the Antioch, you know, at least the quartet and founding members, that I'm very hesitant to make them. Recordings make me extremely nervous because they are a record, you know, they're forever. And I feel that because I'm such a perfectionist, it's very hard for me to enjoy making them and enjoy releasing them into the world. I've found a lot of times when we do concerts, you know, you'll have that concert where you were like, God, that was like such a great concert. And then you go and listen to the recording, and you're like, oh, not actually, no. And then there's the opposite where you come off stage and you're like, God, that could have been so much better. And then you listen to the recording, and you're like, oh my God, that was fabulous. Why didn't we put that on, you know, a recording? So for me, making a recording is not my favorite thing to do, for sure. But I do love championing new composers and bringing their music to light. Obviously, Robert Cure is not a new composer, but I love finding composers that are, you know, underrepresented, throwing them out into the greater choral world.
Have there been discussions of where you might go for a next recording for this? I mean, is another single, I said you like championing that, is another single composer CD a possibility, or are you guys just really enjoyed doing the multi, you know, the programmed CD with multiple composers and stuff like that. I'm just curious in where the group sits. You know, there's a lot of time now to discuss some of this stuff. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The last two CDs we've done have been one composer. So maybe we're on a roll.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to do Ivo Antigone, but he's not American. You know, he's always sent us music and we've done a lot of his works. And I don't think he's had a whole CD done of his music. So maybe I'll pop that one out there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to say we wish you the best. And we, like you said, especially with choral groups, we just don't know what the next months are going to hold. Hopefully you guys can be back together and, you know, doing what you do so incredibly well, the choral art, early in 2022, if at the latest. And we'll look forward to anything else you guys do come up with as far as recording. So again, congratulations on The Cure. I think it's a really good CD. I close on my cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two quick questions. The first question is a hypothetical, which says, if you could chat like we've been chatting here via Zoom, it's still COVID. I'm in Pennsylvania, you're up in Maine. But if you could chat with somebody from the past, someone you never had a chance to talk to, but could, I'm just wondering when I ask that, what's the first name that pops into your head? You can get swamped with names, but just wondering what name popped into your head.
Chopin.
Chopin. That's interesting for a choral conductor.
I know. I'm probably going to get flack for that. I absolutely love Chopin's music. I think it is some of the most beautiful in the world. And whenever I relax, it's with that. And I think it's because it's hard for a lot of people to understand as a musician. A lot of times I like silence because, right, you know, most of my life is filled with music. And I think it's because, you know, I do play piano, but not at that level. It's something that I can't do. And it's something that I just enjoy. I'm not critiquing it. I'm not listening for a flaw. It's just beautiful music. And for me, Chopin, I would love to kind of get in his brain.
I mean, this show's been ongoing in its 18th year. I don't remember everybody. I'm sure someone in the back has picked Chopin, but it hasn't been many, if any. So it's interesting that his name pops up from someone who leads a premier choral ensemble. I've had so many pianists on over all these years. It's like none of them pick Chopin. Final question is non-musical. In normal times, qualifying that, everybody I interview on this program, of course, fills their life with music. Normally you would with Antioch and teaching and all the rest. When you have to get away from music, pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, what do you do if you need to pull yourself away?
Well, I have my little cottage here in Maine, and usually I spend my summers sailing and gardening.
Wow.
This summer has not been too kind on the water. It's been a lot of rain. But yeah, I'm usually out in my little Cape Dory, just sailing the Penobscot Bay and totally chilling.
We couldn't pick two more relaxing activities than gardening and sailing.
No. It's a very different contrast to my life back in New Jersey, which is quite hectic.
Yeah. Joshua Copeland, thanks for taking some time. I really appreciate it.
Sure, David.
Joshua Copeland, founding member and artistic director of the choral group Antioch Chamber Ensemble. You can find out more about them at their website, antiochchamberensemble.org. Their latest CD featuring the music of American composer Robert Keir is on the Bridge Records label. You can check it out at bridgerecords.com. Bridge is also distributed by Naxos, so also naxos.com. We'll dip in once more to that CD and go to the final track, in essence a vocalise on the word Alleluia, but bearing the title Alleluia for Peace, the composer could not resist creeping in the words Dona Nobis Pacem. Here are the closing minutes of that work as sung by Antioch Chamber Ensemble under the direction of their artistic director and my guest today, Joshua Copeland. And as always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.